the basis of this agenda. Thank you. So you are all welcome. Welcome, National Treasury. Dr. Mabuthi, with your team. It will be all yours just in a few minutes. But any apologies, secretaries? No apologies. So the first presentation that we are going to have is by National Treasury, the fourth quarter expenditure report. There's time allocated there, Dr. Mambo, but if you can give us more time for engagement, that would be very much appreciated. But there is time here, and I definitely won't allow you to go beyond 11 o'clock. But anything below 11, it will be very much appreciated. Please take us through and introduce your team as you make your presentation. I'll also request to the honourable members, for the benefit of all of us, that when it comes to the time of interacting with the document, that you please introduce yourself again, so that both for the National Treasury and for the colleagues from either the Standing Committee or the Senate Committee, we know who's around. Thank you very much. Dr. Mapo.
Thank you, Chairperson. As you introduced us, I'm Mampo Modisa from the National Treasury, and I am here with my three colleagues, Dr. Mark Bletcher, who's responsible for health and social services, Ms. Juliette Dubrain, who is responsible for education and related departments, and Mr. James Archer, who is here mostly on infrastructure functions. Chairperson and honorable members, the team comprises of seven people, but today we decided to be just the four of us, just to make sure we maximize and we reduce costs. So when I come for the next quarter, the chances are I'll be bringing a different team, but I just wanted to let the honorable members and the chairperson know that we comprise of seven people, and those will be the people who come and do the presentations. Chairperson, we asked earlier that we have a workshop with the committee. I think the aim of the workshop, especially from the Treasury side, is to find out from the committee how you prefer to get the information. So what we're going to present today would be a standard presentation that we used to do for the FID Parliament, but what we want to know is how you as the committee want to see the information, and if the format that we have, is it useful, will it work, can we improve on it, and what must we do with the presentation. So I'll just go through what we have, but please keep in mind that we would really appreciate the comments on how you want to see the information. So just going through the presentation, this morning's presentation basically is to look at the overall spending outcome for the year 2018-19, and we focus on the main vote and basically where we think there's red flags and where we think the committee can help in terms of your oversight role. So basically the structure of the presentation, we'll just go through the key summary of the spending. We have identified some of the issues for the committee to note, and we will ask you to help us with some of the departments where we find it difficult to deal with. And the spending outcome by Chief Directorate Group, all of those, I think it's about 100 slides. Those are for information. I will not be going through them. We're just going to go through the key one. So basically for 2018-19, the state managed to spend 98.7% of the adjusted appropriation. So the adjusted appropriation would be the appropriation that was done during the MTBA. So what that means is that we didn't spend 11 billion of the amount that was allocated. And the major departments that didn't spend or that showed the most underspending, and I'll go through in detail, but just as a summary, was Cocta, where the underspending was 3.2 billion. We have police, the underspending there was 1.3 billion. the National Treasury also showed an spending of 1.1 billion. Chair, I just need to try and explain. So while we are a team within the Treasury, the functions that we do is to help this committee to do an oversight. So Treasury as a vote also has to come and report. If I come and I say there's a problem in Treasury, they will still have to come and explain. So we were established to try and help the committee to do the oversight. So Treasury is also part of the departments that we look after, and if we pick up problems, we will definitely come and report to the committee. You have the health department, where they underspend by just under a billion, environmental affairs 700 million, and then transport about 640 million. But there was one department that was worrying us, and this is Statistics South Africa, where they showed an overspending of 28.3 million on their overall budget, which is 1.2%. And in terms of economic classification, so if you look at this 11 billion, how is it broken down in terms of economic classification? So the goods and services, that's where the most underspending was, of 5.6 billion, which is 7.9% of the allocated budget. But in transfers and subsidies, you also recorded 5.1 billion. And most of those are coming from COCTA, I'll just explain now. And there was some underspending in capital assets of 2.1 billion. You don't want to see large underspendings in capital assets because that's where the investment comes from. So I think we need to try and get the spending as much as possible in terms of spending on capital assets. So just looking at the department that we are worried about, and especially in terms of compensation of employees, the first one is the defense department, where they overspend by 2.9 billion of their compensation budget, and this is above the ceiling that was set for them. So 2 years ago, the appropriation of the parliament approved compensation for the different departments. So what that means is a department is given a ceiling and they must work within that compensation ceiling, because what we were trying, the aim of introducing this compensation ceiling was to move money away from operations and try to increase or shift the composition of spending into capital. So these departments were struggling to remain within the ceiling. So the biggest one was the Defense Department, where they overspent by 2.9 billion. Then we had police, and the overspending in police was just close to 500 million. But this was because of the public sector wage agreement, where the agreement was much higher than what the department could afford. And as a result, they had to apply for a vireme, and Treasury did approve the vireme of the amount, so they're not going to show irregular expenditure in their financials. And this is the same as Homer says, international relations and cooperation, the overspending was just 126 million, but this is because they didn't budget according to the ceiling that was given. But also remember that DECO has a lot of activities outside of the country, so the movements in the exchange rates tend to affect their budget. So that 126 million was as a result of that. Home affairs problems were a bit difficult. Firstly, the amount was quite small. It was 95 million. But the 95 million was mainly because of overtime. And this was accumulated over the festive season. But another big reason was that there was the IEC and there was the registration weekend. So Home Affairs had to open during those time periods. As a result, they had an overspending of 95 million, but they applied to the Treasury and we did approve most of the requirements. As I said earlier, Statistics SA overspend on the vote, but they also overspend on their compensation of employees ceiling with about 50.5 million. And we have been talking to State SA, asking them, can they please implement the strategies that will help them remain within the ceiling? But they must just make sure the people that exit the system are not the technical people so that they don't lose the skill. So they need to come up with a strategy to try and deal with the over-expenditure. Then there are other departments, chairperson and honorable members, where there was some underspending against their budget, and the biggest one was correctional services, where the underspending was close to a billion of their budget of 17 billion. And this was because the department decided that they will not fill up all the funded positions that they have, and also they still have outstanding payments for the implementation of the OSD, which is the occupation specific dispensation phase 2. So what they're trying to do is they don't fill up the post, they save the money, and then once they have enough money, then they can do the payment for the OSD. We did engage with correctional services, and we're hoping that the plan that they presented to us will help them deal with this problem going forward. Then just looking at the departments that have spent less than 99% of their budget for the year, the first one will be the presidency. But the presidency is a very small department, so if they have few funded positions that they're not filling up, then they will register a large underspending. But this is mainly because of the vacant post. You have the Department of Communication, where the spending was 98.1%, and basically this was as a result of the review of the cost delivery model for the digital television project. So if you do the review, then there's delays in the procurement of the system, and there's also some slow spending in the audiovisual strategy and the gazetting of the draft white paper on these policies. So that resulted in the underspending. Then you have the COCTA, where they registered the largest underspending, especially in terms of transfers, and this was because of the 2 billion that was withheld, and this is the grants to municipalities. So basically, Chairperson and honorable members, what happens in terms of COCTA dispersing the money to the municipalities is that the municipalities have to apply and comply with the Division of Revenue provisions. If these municipalities don't comply, then COCTA can't transfer the money. So the 1.97 billion was basically them withholding the money until the municipalities adhere to these provisions, and as a result, then they will disperse the money. But there's always the issue of the timing, because it takes long to comply. Therefore, the allocated money for the year sometimes is not transferred in full amount. So this was one of those reasons. And then the second one was basically the funds not being able to be transferred, and this was to the implementation agencies for the community works program. But all of these delays, we working with the department. So the public finance team and the intergovernmental team works with COCTA to try and minimize this delay so that we can distribute the money to the municipalities, especially for those that need the money. Then you have international relations and cooperation, where the spending was 97%. So while they overspent on their compensation, when you look at their overall budget, they didn't spend some of the money, and this was because there was a delay in the procurement of the property that they wanted in New York, and this was due to irregularities with the appointment of the service providers. So Treasury has asked them to relook at the tender process and make sure that when they start the new tender, there are no irregularities and it complies with all the procurement regulations. So because they had to redo this tender, as their spending therefore was only 97% of the allocated budget. Then just looking at the National Treasury, the underspending, or they only managed to spend 96.7% of their budget, and this was mainly due to delays in terms of paying for the Development Bank of Southern Africa. And we also had the rescheduling of the procurement of various services in terms of the IFMS project, and that resulted in the underspending. And the last component that added to the underspending in the National Treasury vote was the lower than projected disbursements to the Jobs Fund partners. However, we did speak to the people responsible for the Jobs Fund, and they did come to present in the FEED Parliament on how they plan to fast track the disbursements of these funds, and we will monitor them throughout the 2019-20 period, and if we think they're still not performing the way they should, then we will intervene again. Then you have the Department of Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation, where they only spent 91.3%, but mainly that is due to vacant posts that they have that they can't fill as fast as they wanted to, and also the delays in finding the new building, because for now they're still stationed in the union buildings. You have police, public services and administration, DPSA. Their underspending was due to vacant posts, and they wanted to establish a government employee housing scheme where they house the housing scheme for the government employees, and the delays in establishing that contributed to the underspending. Women's compensation budget was the main contributor to the underspending, but that was due to vacant posts. Women as a small department, and the president, as I said, small vacant positions can tweak the numbers. If you look at it in terms of rent value, the underspending amount was quite small. Then you have the big department, Department of Basic Education. The underspending they managed to spend just close to 99%, and this was because of the delays in receiving the invoices for the systems, and also delays in invoicing by implementation agencies for the school infrastructure backlog grants project, and also they introduce a much stringent verification of these invoices so that they don't pay invoices that they shouldn't be paying. So while they're trying to make sure they use the funds efficiently, that causes delays, and as a result you see some underspending. But it's not something that we worried about. We do encourage the departments to be thorough in terms of looking at the invoices so that they don't get audit findings, but that has consequences as well. Then the Department of Health, the main underspending there was in the National Health Insurance. We did try to move some of the funds in during the adjustment budget from this grant for the stimulus package that the president announced, but even moving these funds, they still were not able to fully spend the National Health Insurance indirect grant, and this was as a result of late invoices, but also the changes in the tender system. The Office of the Chief Justice underspending there was mainly as a result of the delays. They wanted to review their structure and also try to have a new structure that is more efficient and it caters to what they're supposed to do, but the delays in that meant they can't hire the people that they want to hire within the year, so that had some underspending. But also there were outstanding invoices for the Microsoft and e-filing softwares, but also there were postponement of the judicial training. Police, 96.8% spending, and this was... So in a few years ago, the cabinet approved the implementation of the criminal justice system. So in the system itself, they had 7 points. However, the system was supposed to be for the whole justice system. So what tended to happen was that police used they were housing the funds. And as Treasury, we did ask the police department that, look, these funds are not for the department only. These funds are for the entire cluster. So you have to come up with a plan on how you're going to spend the funds within the cluster. So the allocation letter had conditions that you need to give us a new framework on how the entire cluster is going to spend the funds. So because that took long, it means the funds allocated for the criminal justice system were not used, and that is the major underspending in terms of police. agriculture, fisheries, and forestry, main understanding was the failure to spend the 100 million, and this was allocated for the prevention and mitigation of disasters under the land use. But some of the money that was underspent came from the high vacancy rate. You have some departments where the underspending is quite small, but I think the one that is important would be labor, where most of their vacant funded posts were not filled, and these were exacerbated by the delays in invoices by different service providers in terms of procurement. So in general, honorable members and chairpersons, the main underspendings in these departments were the ones that had high vacancy rates, and others were trying to improve their procurement systems, and as a result, there were some delays there. In the transport system, one of the differences compared to the other department was the delay in appointing or the appointment of the taxi scrapping administrator, because we do have a taxi recapitalization program, and we wanted to make sure that we appoint an administrator to manage the process. So the delays in that resulted in some of the underspending. The water and sanitation, I think, honorable members and chairpersons, you remember the valve system that we're still trying to deal with. And the underspending in that department was basically trying to generate some of the savings from the different projects so that we can use the money to fix or to deal with the valve river system. The main thing here is that the department does have money in the different grants, so we just needed to identify the savings and then reallocate the funds to the Val River System project. And they also had some slow filling of vaccine posts. Now, Chairperson, just this one is just the last one where it explains the small departments, but most of this, as I said, is because of invoicing and the filling of posts. Now, for the committee, I think what is important for you to note and what this team is asking you to assist with would be the following department. So the Defense Department, we are really worried about their overspending on compensation of employees. So basically, they're spending $3 billion above what they allowed to spend. We have been engaging with the Defense Department, and we asked them to come up with a plan on how they plan to gradually move into the ceiling that was identified and how they will have to deal with the large numbers, because currently there are about 75,000 people in the Defense Force, but if they have to fall within the ceiling, it means they have to be less than 70,000 people. So they need to come up with a plan on how they deal with the excess. It's not excess staff per se, but how are we going to deal with this? So I think during the course of the year, what we will be doing as Treasury is engage with the plan that they will put forward, and then we will come and report quarterly on the progress that we make on helping the Defense Force to come within the ceiling. And then the second one would be the police. As I explained with the CJS, the 7-point plan, we need these guys to really come up with a plan on how they're going to spend this money in terms of the cluster rather than the police itself. And we will be monitoring that for the course of the year, because you can't have underspending, especially for police, where there's such a need for the budget, and we don't want to move the budget to other sectors because we understand there is a greater need for police or the security cluster as a whole to have these budgets. Then you have the Agri-BEE fund, and this amount was transferred to the land bank, and the whole purpose there was to make sure the blended financing so that it accommodates a wider number of farmers rather than just giving it grants. So we're trying very hard to monitor that and make sure that these funds are directed to disadvantaged black emerging farmers. So that's one project that we're looking at. And we also have some of the restitutions and land reform programs that are very slow, and we need to work with the department to try and fast track those so that they achieve the intended programs. And we do advise these departments. It's just that sometimes the procurement issues tend to take longer than expected. So for the administrative services, the department that we would like to bring to your attention would be the Department of Home Affairs, where they reported unauthorized irregular expenditure of 2.4 million as at end of March 2019, and this was mainly due to non-compliance with supply chain management regulations and interest charge on overdue payment. They did come and apply for a variament, but the variament was a combination of the overtime staff and this. We only approved the variament for the compensation, but for this variament we said the department did not comply. Therefore, it would be very difficult for the Treasury to justify why we would condone such a behavior. So this would show in their financial statement as irregular and unauthorized expenditures, then they will have to come and report to Parliament on how they plan to deal with this. We also had DECO, where we're asking them to look at the missions that they have overseas. They must make sure that while the missions are important to have, but given the funding that we have, or lack of funding that we have as the state, they need to rationalize all of these and just try and be effective, because there's no reason to have in each country in Europe an office, for example. You can just have one central office and then the other countries report in that one office. So we're helping them rationalize their missions. And then the National Treasury, as I said, Chairperson and Honorable Members, if we see something that we're picking up even from our own department, we do come and report so that you can hold the accounting office of the Treasury responsible. But here, basically, what we're looking at is the Department of Women, where they have been struggling to fill the core program or the vacant post in core program. So we need to try and help them. But with the new reorganization and the new functions that they've got, we hope that the skills will be transferred as well, and this problem may be dealt with. In terms of Treasury, as I said before, the IFMS spent only 41.8% of its total budget as at 2018-19. So the underspending was mainly due to the rescheduling of the procurement of various services, but we did engage with the Treasury to say that, look, for the year we understand that there were delays, but for the coming year of 1920, you need to deal with the delays and make sure that you fast track the services and your procurement systems. And we also had to look at the budget for communications, and a total allocation of 187 million was transferred by this department to the SABC. Chairperson, in the afternoon session, we will also deal with some of the state-owned companies that require funding, but for now, what we have done for the year 2018-19, we just transferred 187.4 million, and I think I did speak a lot about the statistics that say overspending. In terms of
can I interrupt you? There are some technical terms that you use. Can you take us along? For instance, you talk about variance, exactly what does it mean, and so on, or that if you come across such things, then
I'm saying sorry, Chairperson, we're so used to talking technical, I'll
yeah,
do my
just remember that, you see, if I know if nurses talk and they start using their things, we won't understand them, so take other people along, thank you.
Thank you, Chair, I will definitely try. In terms of urban development and infrastructure, the big project that we want the committee to have a look at or to monitor would be the Vaal River system.
Just explain what I mean.
So Vaal River, Chairperson, is basically moving money from goods and services to transfers, or moving money from compensation to transfers, or from transfers to compensation. So what we use the environments for is for the department. So when you start the year, the departments give us a plan, but during the course of the year, things change and they start realizing that they might not achieve the expected spending. So between July and the rest of the year, we allow the departments to move funds to programs where they under budgeted from the programs where they over budgeted. So it's just trying to help them adjust their budget so that they don't come to underspending at the end of the year. Okay. So for the Department of Water Affairs, I think what we want the committee to monitor would be the valve system, but also Chairperson and Honorable Members, the War on Leaks project in terms of the Department of Water and Sanitation has showed a lot of overspending, and this is resulting in overall overspending of the goods and services. So that project, so what they did was the department came to ask to move money from compensation of employees to do the war on leaks. Now, the project itself was already found to be irregular by the Auditor General. So Treasury could not condone the irregular expenditure to move the funds into this project. So the department is overspending on the project, and I think they will have to come and report on how they plan to deal with the overspending in this. So the department will... We will monitor it, but it's difficult, Chairperson and Honorable Members, because this is a commitment that the department has. But if the Auditor General finds that it's irregular, then it becomes difficult for Treasury to even condone spending towards something that is irregular. So the department has to conclude on the war on leaks and come up with alternative ways to do this training. Because basically, War on Leaks project is trying to train artisans to help in the department, especially in terms of monitoring and fixing of dams and things and sanitations. But we have other institutions like your CETAs that provide training. So we ask the department, instead of housing this, because it's costing you a lot of money and you already have overspending, why can't you look at other alternative systems that already exist that can come and provide the same service? So that's what we told them to do. We will come back and report to you if that's what they've been doing during the course of the year. And then in the health department, I think the biggest worry that we have would be the spending on NHI grant, as I explained in the previous slides. So, Chairperson and Honorable Members, these are some of the key issues that we think we might need assistance from the committee in to monitor them. We do speak and engage with the department on a weekly basis, but some of these things take time to do, and sometimes we get a bit frustrated because the system is very difficult to maneuver, but we do work with the departments, but sometimes we might need your help in terms of calling the departments to come and account for some of the spending patterns that the team is picking up to be problematic. So, Chairperson, that is me.
Thank you so much. Before we proceed, we have just received apologies from the Minister of Finance, from the Deputy Minister, and from the Director General. The Deputy Minister Director General may join us in the afternoon. Honourable Members, thank you very much. Here's the story. Can I hear you? Okay, you'll be noting the questions. As I said, please start by mentioning your name for the benefit of the team. Honourable Member.
Thank you very much, Chair, and thank you for the presentation. I'm going to ask you please to remember that we are newish members, or very new members, and we need to get used to your style and some of your technical references as well. So some of our questions may seem a little bit simplistic, but I think it's important to delve into the matters and kind of set a precedent going forward. So my first question is
before the question, I remember.
I beg your pardon. My name is Dennis Ryder, NCOP member. The first question is a very straightforward one. I see that it's for quarter four spending. I'm just wanting to ask, is this a cumulative year-to-date figure that you're reporting on? Are these cumulative year-to-date figures that you're reporting on? Which makes this quite an important presentation. I've noted the nods, Chairperson. Thank you. So the fact that these are cumulative quarter-on-quarter is quite important. I noted that there's a theme throughout of delayed invoicing being used as an excuse. Now, in terms of the Standard Charter of Accounts, I think, you know, where expenditure is incurred within a period, that is more an accounting issue that can be fixed once those invoices come through, or are the invoices not forthcoming or having the wrong dates on, et cetera, because delayed invoicing, slow to invoice shouldn't be the problem because that gets fixed up at a later stage. So if you can just indicate if a lot of these issues are going to go away once the invoices are in fact received. I also wanted to ask, please, you have some interesting, what are they called, abbreviations or things like on slide 15, you have an RYM, which I'm sure is intra-yearly, but you haven't told us what it stands for. Some of those are quite difficult to work out. Others are easy, so where it says SABC, please don't worry about that. But if you can give us a little bit of a clue, I think also on the next slide there's an IFMS of the National Treasury. Maybe you can just give us a clue of those things. Certainly in presentations going forward until we get used to, again, your style. I think it's important to ask the question, you know, underspending and overspending can sometimes be a good thing and it can sometimes be a bad thing, and particularly with underspending, if you underspend but you meet all of your targets, it's actually a good thing. So I think it's quite important for you to indicate for us as well, especially now since these are quarter four figures that we're getting, Chair, important for us to note as well, in terms of the underspending, the percentage target that was met by the department, if that's available. Obviously, I know that the departments are still finalising and they're still doing their giving us an indication of how their performance has been. But certainly, if a department is meeting its targets and underspending, I think that should actually be lauded instead of targeted. I did note with concern that a number of the underspending departments are the key departments that we look to for service delivery. So COGTA, I know, is in the news at the moment because they're only getting 9% of the National Treasury budget, et cetera, et cetera, and crying for more, and there's a report that local government is underfunded. Coming from local government, I must agree. But now to see that this underspending in COGTA is quite concerning, especially when one sees that a lot of that has got to do with disbursement of special grants, et cetera, et cetera. So I'm quite worried about some of those things, and perhaps we need to, as a group, Chair, get some guidance as to how deeply we delve into these issues. I think, you know, as Treasury and Appropriations, we have we have the potential to go into each department and tell them exactly how they should be doing their business. So, for example, with Water Affairs, I've got some good ideas about what they should be doing and doing things differently. War on Leaks as well is a particular one. You know, why not link that with Public Works Public Works projects? But, is that really our mandate to start looking at that, or do we merely look at it from an appropriations point of view, from a COG point of view like that? again, basic education, the comments about health actually leave me cold. The fact that we're not getting any spending on mental health issues. Isidimeni was a tragedy that killed a number of people, but it certainly didn't kill off all of our mental health patients. So the fact that there's no spending there, I think, is important. And, Chair, I think it would be most useful to us if we could work out what tools are there in our toolbox that we can use to try and enforce and make sure that these departments are doing the spending I think, you know, do we have an opportunity, and I think we should, and I'm going to ask for the opportunity to call the health department in to the appropriations committee and ask them what's going wrong, why are you not performing. And so I think it's important that we as a committee have the ability to summon these other departments and make them to give account here to us, because seemingly going through the administrative channels is not always happening and not having the desired effect. Those, Chair, are my opening questions, but I do want to appreciate the presentation again. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson, colleagues, ladies and gentlemen, good morning. I am Zola Mlenzana from the ANC. I am in the Standing Committee on Appropriations. Chair, let me start by welcoming how I know at a particular point you and the co-chairs consider this the view of a workshop so that we are all on par. We don't have to take a decision now. Too spontaneous for us to just shoot.
The second one, Chair, would also be to welcome the remedial actions that National Treasury is putting forward. I think we also have to apply our minds and see how best to implement in the light of the fact that good doctor is consistent in saying a department that is National Treasury would be interacting with us on a quarterly basis. But then we should think aloud as to how then do we fit in this particular department which are worrisome. Because I think we need to check a particular way of dealing with them. Outside the normal settings between us and the Treasury.
Chair, on COGDA, on the division of
Revenue Act to municipalities, non-effective spending or incapacity to spend or whatever related terminology that you can use. Are we able, as appropriations, to get details up to the level of getting the municipality, the figures, and their cash flows, so that, Chair, we are able to, from the side, assist in terms of making a follow-up, understanding that when we are talking local government, they are the whole face of service delivery. So we just cannot sit back and relax when there is such that has to be attended to.
Chair, I am not going to go through all these departments deliberately to assess time.
But then, in the light of the President's call, Kauleza.
And now you have got
this challenge of the slow pace on procurement. I don't want to quickly point fingers at either the department or the service provider. But then, is there no way, Doc, of I know it is not there. I had some time at that level. And also in the NCOP, I know there isn't a way. What's always there, Chair, is that if service providers are not paid in due course, they are able to take the department, you know, to task. But there isn't a reciprocal kind of an approach where the service providers are not coming forth like invoices. Would it be harsh for us if we then say introduce like you
we have to forfeit if, for instance, you have worked and implemented and but now invoices are not coming forth for this particular period. Because in the majority of cases, Chair, that is usually linked to fronting. Because, I mean, it is a result of fronting, where somebody has done the actual work, but is now waiting for an invoice to be printed somewhere by somebody else. You know, a low servant was just a boy with a servant who is seated somewhere. My last one, Chair, would be on this one. Thanks for the clarification on violence. Thanks for that short workshop. What I have in mind, Chair, with violence, I'm not against violence. But then, are you able, as National Treasurer, to pick up that this particular one is actually more of fiscal dumping than the normal environment? I'm taking this from your explanation, where you're saying there has been a business plan for the department. It has been approved by the portfolio committee and has been work done. There has been cash flow, which I believe, as you are saying, they're meeting departments almost on a regular basis, and they're getting reports on their expenditure trends. But now all of a sudden, when it comes to July, they begin to have second thoughts that, look, we want actually to spend this money, but there's no capacity in terms of this particular budget. But then just for us to be said or to be labeled and they have spent, let us now change goalposts. Are you able to do that? Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much. The next is Honorable Dipo Peter. I'm taking names that have been noted by the Chair, but then if there are other hands, members that they want to contribute as well, you will get that opportunity. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. My name is Elizabeth Dipo Peters from the African National Congress. And I want to take this opportunity to thank the team from National Treasury for the presentation, and also ask as a precursor to what I would be raising a question, to say, taking into consideration the fact that this is already 2019-20 third quarter, I presume that the issues that you raise here would have already been addressed with the relevant departments in terms of the indications of the capacity building. I'm raising generic things now, in terms of the areas that you have identified for capacity building, for strengthening, for support, and for intervention as National Treasury. And if I've got to go into the specifics, I remember the colleague in front of me raised a matter related to the ability of this committee to intervene in some of the areas identified in your report directly with regard to the issues that you are raising in particular departments or with regard to particular votes. I will make an example. Under vote 3, you indicate there that there's this DGT project, and I mean, this is something that has actually been moving on and on and on and on and postponed several times. I'm not going to go into what he has indicated here, but also the indications that the Department of Communications have appointed SAPO as its delivery agent for the implementation. I'm trying to think fast about what is it that we can do as this committee to make it possible that this particular project that has seen pronouncements and pronouncements, and actually what has happened is that we seem to be lagging behind as a country with the implementation of this particular project. So I just wanted to ask that. The other one is under vote 4, you indicate there the issue related to disaster management. The program spends significantly on consultants to carry out assessments. I am sitting here having a picture of the disaster that we have seen happening in various parts of our country, especially with the flood. And if I am affected in a situation like that, and you tell me that there is no capacity for disaster management in the municipalities and provinces and South Africa, as opposed to intervening to give me a food parcel at the time of the disaster, or a blanket to go and sleep in a community hall. And then you tell me that it is only after all those that you can then be looking at a consultant to evaluate or assess the damage. And I think that is why you then have a situation where you have resources for disaster interventions and the money is not spent. And for me, those are the things that you said. Do we need capacity for disaster management components in municipalities as opposed to the quick low-hanging fruit open for fraud and corruption type of interventions like food parcels, because that is where people get an opportunity to really siphon off a government money. I'll go to slide 14. Under slide 14, I'm recommending that what you say there in terms of the capacity that you would want to build in the area of the office of the Valuer General needs to be expedited, because, and that's why my first question about whether those interventions have already been done, or is it still an intention on National Treasury to help the Office of the Valuer General to improve its capacity. This is extremely urgent. I mean, you would remember since 1994, one of the key things that has always been in focus with regard to deliverables of government is the issue of land reform. And we're sitting 25 years down the line, and we are told that there is a challenge with regard to the capacity of the Office of the Valuer General to value land parcels timeously. And if we talk about now expropriation of land without compensation, we don't even know the value of that land as we speak, and we're now talking about without compensation. You might even be taking land that is valueless and all those type of things. So I'm raising it that it's some of the things that Treasury needs to give us. What is it that you are doing to make sure that that capacity is improved? Because we can't allow you also to come in as an inspectorate at the end and keep on saying to the people the same things over and over again. Slide 16. There's the issue of unfunded field posts of standards, say, to the tune of 50 point what? Something million. I'm just worried. Do we have managers with HR capacity in Stats SA? If they can then fill unfunded, let's start there. The post has been filled to that level, but it is unfunded. And I think many of the departments are actually sitting in that situation where they've got unfunded posts. If this can be allowed to go without hitting over the knuckles for the people involved in this, it will be a very bad example. Yes, we do need their information for management and all those. Before I continue, maybe I'll pause here, but The worrying other thing, I'll make an example again about KZN. Slide 17, we talk about the national health insurance. My colleague has spoken about the issue of life STD many tragedy. But I think, if anything, you'd remember there was even a challenge to the MEC of Health in KZN with regard to cancer patients not getting the requisite intervention to prolong their lives and to give them hope. And now we hear about little spending. Little, if the word little is even more worrying, because little is a drop. So you've got a parent, you've got an aunt, you've got neighbors, you've got community members in your constituency ravaged by these diseases, and there's little spending. I think there must be something that Treasury can do and give us also as this committee hope that yes, there's been intervention that would then allow for helping the Department of Health with regard to these critical areas. And especially because it is a focal intervention for national health insurance. Thank you very much for now, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. Let me join my colleagues in thanking Prof for a very good presentation, of which is not pleasing to our ears. I have questions of all the issues raised as reasons for underspending. Which ones are new developments and which ones are long-standing issues? I am sure from slide number 4, the new developments will be on cooperative governance and traditional affairs. Why do I say this? Our traditional leaders are really suffering, and they are taking care of their rural community. You check on all corners. There's nothing that they're not doing for the people. But those people are really getting peanuts when it comes to their salaries. I'm sure the new development will be in the traditional affairs, in the case of cooperative governance and traditional affairs. If they don't have the new development, tell them that the traditional leaders need those money and then be able to use them. The other question, which departments are showing improvement on their performance? I also believe that all the departments that have underspent, I'm sure wherever they are trying to do something. The Honorable Peters said something that I'm not going to repeat. And really, it is shocking. I heard you in your presentation. You said something that, like, you are not worried about some of the issues when it comes to the women, basic education and health. On their understand, you said something like that. If I did not understand you correctly, then you'll have to assist me. To me, it is shocking. People need to be employed. But these people have got vacant posts. Maybe we need to do something, Chairperson. We must do something in order to assist these people. And I'm sure this will be the last presentation for this term. At the end of this term, we won't have this underspending report. Thanks, Chair.
Thanks, Chair. Thanks, National Treasury, for the report. It's mind-blowing, especially on the understanding side, because I think we struggled, I think, last 5 years with overspending, and now it's coming to a new fashion of underspending. So I think we just need to track it very carefully, that it doesn't become a norm that we are sitting with this underspending. But I want to check, is there any departments that you have mentioned on this list that have maybe been previously on your last financial year, 2017-2018, they were maybe also on this list of for underspending, so that we can track the patterns of these departments, because some of them are quite concerning. So we don't want it to continue, especially the one of home affairs, of the overtime. We know home affairs have a staff shortage. You can just go to the home affairs here by us around the corner. It's a staff issue. So we need to find a way to sort of assist them there, so it don't progress into tomorrow you're going to sit with a 1 billion amount of overtime that needs to be paid out. I know, Chair, maybe perhaps we will still call in the departments that we have flagged out and engage them more. We can't actually engage National Treasury because they are just here to give us some form of information to sort of whip the ones that have done wrong. On that said, Chair, I just want to check on the international relation one. You have mentioned on the irregular tender process on the officers, yes. Can you please just give us information as to what was that irregularities in some more information pertaining to that, please. So when they are coming, then we exactly know where to target. And then in the Department of Labor, the vacant post there as well, quite concerning. Is the vacant post still the labor inspectors, or is it maybe other vacant posts that they are struggling to fill? Because we know last time they were struggling to fill the labor inspector post. So is there, is it still the same vacant positions? And I think also maybe perhaps in the other departments as well where vacant positions are noted, if you do have the information that you can share with us as to which in which areas is that vacant position and for how long were they vacant as well, that is also important. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Members. I'll allow National Treasury to answer and then I'll take the second round of questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Juliet Brain. I deal with Education and Relations Department. Labour is also one of them. Honourable Member, it is the same labour inspectors, and I think as we explained before, the level at which they are offering the position in the Department of Labour is at a lower level than, let's say, in minerals and safety or in the private sector. So when people apply, they will go for the jobs that get paid more. We have advised them to go to the DPSA and have the post re-evaluated so that they add additional skills and or training and or qualifications so that they can then, because these are the people that must do the inspections that we require around health and safety, employment equity, etc. So maybe this is possibly where you asked also, is it the same department over the same thing, the Department of Labor? This has been a problem for a good few years, so that may be one of the departments that the committee might like to call on this issue.
Chairperson, honourable members, I think for us in public finance, the questions that you're asking, they don't get me excited because excited is the wrong word, but the sense that at least something may happen to help us deal with the department, so we really appreciate the comments. So just trying to come up, summarize a few. The issue of invoicing, that is one of the biggest problems that we have, because there's departmental invoicing. So Department of Public Works will invoice another department. Those
those delays or those disputed invoices are causing a problem in the system. So what makes it difficult within department to department invoicing is that the departments seem to be, they tend to relax because they know it's the state. So most of the invoices that we're struggling with and that are resulting in the not payment would be the ones that are interdepartmental invoices or public entity to department. So what we try and do when it comes to the delays in the invoicing and the environment where we start to move funds is that we don't allow the departments to just dump the money into different accounts so that they can spend it later. If the department delays in paying this year's invoices, then next year they have to find the money within their budget to deal with the invoicing. Some of the departments can do that, but some of them struggle a lot in terms of invoicing. But I think the invoicing also comes with the procurement issues that the department experience. So the Office of the Chief Procurement Officer is finalizing the procurement bill, and we're hoping that the procurement bill may help in releasing some of the pressures and how the different departments should be dealing with invoicing and procurement issues. Chairperson and honorable members, is it fair if I ask that I look at the presentation again and all the acronyms that are there, I explain them in different or in separate slides and then resend the presentation? In the next one, because for today's one, the presentations are already printed, it would be difficult for me to change the one we're going to do now on public entities in the afternoon. But I will resubmit all of them where all the acronyms are explained in the document. And for the future, I will try not to use the acronyms. Guys, please remind me. I'm trying to do that. The issue of underspending, honorable members, is a difficult one. So departments who overspend, that is unauthorized expenditure, they have to explain to the Auditor General, they have to come and explain to Parliament whether you condone the overspenditure. So for a department to overspend, it's a big disadvantage because they have to do all the work to try and explain why they overspend. When it comes to underspending, the penalties are not as large. So they seldom come and explain why they underspend on certain programs. So there's different types of the underspending that we look at. So if there is an underspending because the department is identifying savings to try and deal with the pressure points, that underspending is welcomed. If there is underspending because they are improving their procurement systems and trying to use the funding efficiently, that underspending is welcomed. If you have departments who were very heavy on administrative staff and they are rationalizing the way they do business, that underspending is good. The underspending that becomes very difficult to justify is, for example, the Department of Water and Sanitation. You cannot have underspending in compensation where the department itself is struggling to provide the service. So if there's underspending, but that underspending is, you can see it's hurting the department, that underspending is the underspending that we deal with. Then you have underspending in case of DECO, which I'll explain now, where we picked up irregularities in terms of their program. That underspending is welcome in Treasury because it means we have identified a problem in the system and they must go and fix it. But if you have capital projects where the underspending is due to delays, where a department is just moving slow in implementation, then that underspending becomes a problem. So just to explain DECO, the procurement or the company that was selected to run the project, we picked up that there's some irregularities and the way in which the person was selected or the company was selected leaves much to be desired. So as a result, we said to DECO, we've picked up this problem. You have to redo the entire procurement system so that we know when you advertise the tender, when you awarded the tender, this was a fair tender and everyone who applied had a chance. Because we felt that there was something in the tender that was not fair, that resulted in the person getting the tender, which we think if it was open, it was fair, maybe someone else would have gotten the tender. So if you look at that fund, you realize that it is underspending, but we picked up irregularities, so we want to fix the system. So those type of underspendings are important. Chairperson, on COCTA, I think what would work, in the previous parliament, we came to present a note that explains the nature of the underspending in terms of local government, the municipalities that are involved, and the monies for the different municipalities. May I please send that note to the Secretariat, and the committee can have a look at the note, but if you feel we should come back and explain more details, we are available to do exactly that. So when I leave, I will just send the note to the Secretariat. In terms of the environment and the fiscal dumping, when departments come, especially the 31st or in March for environment, that's where we have a thorough look at why they want to shift the funds and what are they going to do with the funds. So if they want to shift the funds from compensation to transfers to deal with people who are retiring or the severance packages, and they do have a plan and that doesn't affect the way they do the work, then we do allow some of those environments. However, Chairperson and Honourable Members, in terms of the Appropriations Act, Treasury can approve a certain amount of environments, but the rest of the environment has to be approved by Parliament. So if you look at the appropriation bill, it explains which environment must be approved by this committee or proposed by this committee. So what we try and do, or the Act, the intention of the Act is to help avoid such fiscal dumping. So Treasury would propose that these ones can be approved. Some of them are not approved, and it's for the reasons that we look at the department, we see what they want to do with this environment, and if we think it's not a good environment, then we don't propose that Parliament goes through with it. So there's different ones. The appropriation bill says a department cannot move funds from capital spending into operational spending. So even if they come, that automatically is not approved. So we do try and manage the way in which we move the funds within the vote. The departments that are problematic, so it just differs each year, but the ones that have been consistent on our list is the Department of Health. My colleague Dr. Blanchard will explain more on the Department of Health, but we have been having problems with that department. The Department of Defense, we've been having issues since the introduction of the expenditure ceiling. The Department of Interrelations, DECO, the biggest problem there is the rationalization of the missions, because they're seeing overspending in there, so we've been working with them through that. Statistics SA, they are overspending. They still have to come and ask the committees whether to condone or not condone. They still have to explain to the Auditor General, so they have a lot of work to do. But the basic issue there is that they don't have a plan on how to deal with the overstaffing. So there's different staff in Statistics SA. So if there's a census where we allocated money for the census in 2020, that money is not part of the establishment. So they can go hire additional people to do the census, and that money is allocated for. The problem with what they have now is their permanent staffing. So we think that they can rationalize the staffing so that they can use the funds efficiently. So that was the biggest problem in Statistics SA. But I think because now they've registered an underspending, they'll be forced to come up with the plan. But we will come and report on the progress made within the year. So there's an honorable member who asked us, because we're now in July, has there been any progress on the issues that are here? So we do engage with the department, we do talk to them, however you pick it up in the numbers. So once we get the numbers, that's when we see if they're implementing the discussions that we have. If they're not implementing it, then the numbers for the first quarter will show that they still have the big problem. So the one that I'm likely to bring in the next quarter would be the Defense Department, because we still haven't gotten or received the plan on how they're going to deal with the overstaffing. So that might come in the quarter, but the other ones, you only pick them up in the numbers. And then I think I dealt with quota. Mark, please deal with health while I still identify the others.
Okay. Thank you. Good morning, Honourable Chair and members. We look forward to getting to know you all and working with you. And hope you get to know us also soon. The point that one of the Honourable members made about recurrent underspending, I think, is an important point. And we could, if the committee wants, provide you with a list of the evolution of underspending, say, over 5 years, like what every department has underspent, so you could see the trend, which departments continually underspend. Because I think particularly given that there are some new members here, I think trends will start to emerge and people will come to recognize where certain problems are recurrent. So on the Department of Health, I do want to point out two kind of ongoing problems. The first one is that national health insurance is a big national priority. In fact, the bill is back in cabinet today, but it's a big issue in the department. 2.4 billion was reprioritized towards national health insurance over 3 years in last year's budget. Now, the department has just not built capacity to run the national health insurance program. There's about two or three people in the department running the national health insurance program, and they previously had two grants. Now they've got one fairly big grant, but they're just not able to manage this grant. They don't have the capacity. I think that the incoming minister is aware of it, and he wants to fix it. But what we see in the spending for the last year is at least 25% of the grant being underspent. So about 600 million on national health insurance being underspent, and in many components being underspent, in the personal service component, the non-personal. We see in this mental health, as the Honourable Member mentioned, you know, this very, very serious problem of life is in many. Then 90 million being allocated to try to address that, and then nothing being spent of the 90 million. So that's really problematic. Similarly on the cancer services. But as I said, the bigger picture here is that in the transition into the National Health Insurance Fund, the department needs to appoint at least about, say, 10 to 12 staff. And the NHR War Room has done some work to identify what staff at what levels are needed to manage some of these NHR programs. So that's the one problem I want to point out, but that capacity has to be built. The second problem I just want to point out, Honourable Chairperson, is that there was a very prolonged strike in the Department of Health for almost a year over the past year. It was around the leakage in the roof and some of the conditions in the Civitas building. But it was very difficult to resolve. And it really, really affected the whole functioning of the department for probably a year. I mean, a lot of the department was not functioning for a year. And it's not been fully resolved. And so a lot of these delayed tenders actually were because people were not at work to do the tenders. So, you know, people were off work for very prolonged periods of time. So it's a prolonged administrative problem. And so, you know, this is an issue of oversight by this committee, both this issue of the capacity to oversee the national health insurance, but also the administrative functioning of the Department of Health. It's something we would appreciate if these two committees do help to address these issues or give some support in addressing these issues. If I could just add on just two other questions that were raised. So in addition to what Dr. Modise said about South Africa, our colleague who's not with us today, who oversees that vote, said says that there's a 70 million shortfall between warm bodies and compensation budgets in South Africa, and they're busy with a costing exercise and business process analysis to determine if additional funding is needed for capacity, and GTAC, which is the Government Technical Assistance Agency, is helping with that work. And our colleague who does some work with the Valuer General on land says that the new structure was recently approved and that they're using departmental and old departmental and deeds office structures, and that there's been a heavy reliance on consultancies, which has been a problem. There has been commitment by the new DG and minister to the IMC to capacitate the entity, so they're aware of the problem. They are trying to address the problem. It's just a comment from our colleague who's not here. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Honourable Member raised a question or a comment about disaster capacity, and Honourable Member, you're very, very correct. What we've seen, you know, in the past and to date is a lot of reactive response. We've got a lot of, for example, emergency grants, disaster response grants, and all of those are very reactive. So when the disasters happen, we are able to respond. But there has been a move towards more proactive stance, and the Departments of Cooperative Governance, Human Settlements, Environmental Affairs, I think, are leading that agenda, where we're looking at more, you know, resilient cities. So at a municipal level, allowing, getting the municipalities to plan for disaster response proactively and in advance, and even when approving new township layouts, etc., that they take this into consideration. So even things like dealing with water leaks, water resource management, the way you develop human settlements, etc., are all part of developing a resilient city for proactive response to disasters before they even happen. Thank you.
Chairperson, the last question I think we didn't resolve was the reason for understanding the new versus old. So basically the understanding and compensations tend to be the new ones because we introduced the ceilings 2 years or so ago. The invoices have always been a problem, but what we did last year, and I think we're going to continue to do with this committee, is to provide the audited financial statement information on unpaid invoices. Because while you have the in-year invoices where they're showing underspending, they accumulate over a period. And one department that has some of those invoices was the Department of Water and Sanitation. So once we have the financial statement, the report that we're going to bring around September, August, when it's finalized, we will also bring these invoices so that we can discuss them with the committee to see how we can resolve those. Then the invoice, the delays, so the underspending because of the delays of implementation of projects, that remains with us because of how the procurement system is in government as a whole, but we hope that the new procurement bill may reduce the delays in terms of procuring, especially for infrastructure projects. So we just need to monitor that. And I think, Chairperson, we will have to ask the Office of the Chief Procurement Officer once the bill is submitted to Parliament to also come and just give a presentation of the bill and how the bill is intending to help the departments procure better and faster. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you. Can I take a second round? Honourable, the name again.
Thanks, Chair. My name is Ashul
Sarkar. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. So just hold on to them. 7. Then 8. Okay. Can I ask honourable members that there are many of us who want to speak. Let's try to be a bit concise with our questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I do have a cold, so I apologise. I don't sound very good. The first question, Chair, I have is I see that overall, if you look at the expenditure by economic classification, the overall capex underspend, capital expenditure, I'm going to try not to speak in acronyms, Chair, is 13.2%. I was wondering if we could get a list of all of the projects that were not completed in time, or not where no spending happened across the entire government, because it would be good to know how many schools were not completed or built, clinics, etc., etc. These are coal-faced service delivery issues. And then secondly, what's missing from the report, Chair, for you is when we speak about fiscal dumping, it would be good to get a report on expenditure by department, first quarter, second quarter, third quarter, fourth quarter, the percentage. So if they only spend 5% in the first quarter, but are spending 95% by the time you get to the fourth quarter, you need to ask yourself what planning is going on in the fourth quarter now for the new financial year. Or are they just submitting budgets to Treasury without actually intending on spending? Because you have this phenomenon, and I've seen this both at local and provincial governments, where expenditure massively skyrockets in the final quarter, and you ask yourself, so what were departments doing for most of the year? Do people only wake up in the fourth quarter and decide we've got to now meet our APP targets? And then, Chair, in terms of environments, I'd just like to get an idea by departments. When you do environment, it means something has to be sacrificed. Something is losing out. What was lost out? I mean, I'm not expecting you to give me the answer right now, but if we can get a report as to what they decided to cut, because that also speaks to poor budgeting at the start of the year. If you're going to say, I'm going to spend 100 million rand in stationery, and you suddenly realize you only need 10 million rand in stationery, there's a problem with the way you're doing your budgeting, and it would be good to know which departments are guilty of that as well. In terms of the invoices, and a lot has been spoken about it, is there an accruals management system in place? What are the accruals looking like for departments? You say that, you know, they have to budget it for it in the next year. There's no rollover, which means that they are suffering from accruals, and it would be good to know what the accruals are by departments as well. And then lastly, Chair, I'm going to keep it concise. There are other matters, but I'm sure I can submit some written questions through to the officials. 30-day payments of suppliers by departments. What's going on there? It's a huge issue across government, and it would be also good to get a report. As I'm not expecting answers now, but I think through the Secretariat, if we can get a report as to 30-day payment suppliers as well by department, that would be useful in terms of the financial management of government. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Fani Letoy. I'm the Freedom Front Plus. I've been partially covered by the previous speakers. I also want to thank you for the presentation. It's quite enlightening. Questions that I had have been covered with regards to the overspending and underspending. My point of view is that we must have a holistic approach towards the figures that are given to us. We mustn't only focus on quarterly stats to see what the root cause of the problems are. You did mention that you would look at a list that will be provided to us with regards to different state entities and departments where overspending and underspending has been taking place, to see if there's a trend so that we can speak to the trend and get to the root cause of the problem to resolve them. Thank you.
Thank you very much. My name is Kenny Morolo. I'm from the African National Congress. Well, I think the issue of underspending is quite perturbing. It has been raised by many speakers here. But for me, what is of interest sake is the fact of consequence management. Whilst we would want to be furnished with the details of the evolution of underspending, we would want to know whether there is consistent allocation of funds to departments that continue to underspend. And if it is, why is it there when departments continue to underspend? We also would want to have national treasury plans, for instance, with respect to overspending on compensation. Therefore, being one of them, death and defense, we obviously are interested in wanting to know what are national treasury plans to try and cap overspend on compensation. The report also indicates that there are turnaround plans for SABC. There are many challenges in the SABC. Fires in the building and payments of suppliers and so on. I'm interested in wanting to know when is this turnaround plan going to be finalized. I'm also interested in wanting to know the timelines for the completion of the integrated financial management system and how it's going to help us deal with future savings. With regard to small business, can Treasury provide clarity on the exact nature of ICT challenges? Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Chair. I'm Edward Njadu from the African National Congress. Chair, yeah, listening to the presentation, it is a matter of concern to understand in terms of when you listen, it seems that practical steps in terms of the matters raised in terms of overspending, underspending, in terms of accountability over the in terms of the underspending, overspending, and also the reasons for the underspending. Chairperson, I think this workshop, we need to look at real practical steps, not just to say the department must just have a report on accounting why the overspending and just get away to say that this was the reasons why we overspend. But if we will have to go to implementation and also to coalesce in implementation, we cannot just have a business as usual. We do have to look at how are we going to do things different as to make sure that this sixth administration, we will not experience what the fifth administration, how things were being done. How can we do things different as to look at what is coming out of the presentation, but to look as to what can we put in place in terms of strategic implementation, and also to look at the challenges that are within the departments to address that in a short time of space, to look at if there's capacity challenges and things like that. How can we look at that to speed up trying to turn around the departments in terms of the spending patterns? Thank you.
Who's next?
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, and thank you to the department for the presentation. I just would like to start off with saying that I support the workshop. And the reason why I'm saying supporting the workshop, if you come from a province where you do the financing and the budget and the SCOPA and the AG all in the same cluster committee, while here in Parliament is all separate committees. And the reason for the workshop is then to assist that we do not, that we understand clearly what is our mandate and not delving too much technically into the operational part of the other portfolio committees that manage departments. So that we understand that our mandate clearly, I think that's important. And then on vote one, the president's vote, and I noted the expenditure on the legal fees and litigation, and I think we're going to monitor that, from one president to another president's office, how that is going to take place and shape the future. My question on SA Stats, thank you for sharing information, but I think that I want to just support the question as to where you raised about they have to do something to bring the department down with about 5,000 employees. Or the question is, if they have an overspending, if there is an overspending, does it automatically mean it is, of course, it's probably unauthorized and an unfunded post that sits there? And I think that is now, in the province where I come from, if there's even very senior posts that need to be filled, even the HOD or cabinet makes a decision on certain calls, on certain posts before they fill it. So, and it seems to me some departments just have carte blanche to, fill, because they themselves see the needs, and afterwards when they want to sort out the problems with overspending. The defense, I would like to ask the I think it's maybe an operational thing, but it's just for information. All this expenditure there, does it include peacekeeping forces, or is it just the defense that's in South Africa dealing with their budget? Or if it's overall. I didn't hear a lot about the traditional leaders in all the provinces. I tried to read there, but I didn't see big budgets. It appears under control, but I think the essence of where the country is going, I think, needs to become a discussion point. Because if what I noted of the previous term, that first came to Parliament and there's approval, but there's no budget with it. So you know, to roll out in the department any further programs. On the police, I want to say we are very, I think one of the first priorities that the President has mentioned is job creation. And we have to look at from outside into departments where jobs can be created. I mean, the thousands of volunteers that were there in the police, reservists and volunteers that were there while policemen were sitting in offices and not out in the fields, that is something that we need to address to create jobs. The question I want to ask on the NHI, to my knowledge, there was a long period for a pilot project. So is the pilot project now completed? The fact that the President has raised this in the SONA and said it is and it's going to become a reality. So I accept that the pilot project is finished and completed. And where is that? And that report will probably inform the government how to move forward. And I'm interested in that because the situation on the ground in health is a big concern. And we need to have better quality services to our people. And I think it was raised on the by yourself what happened with money that was allocated and not spent in. Life is immense. So I'm keen to know, whilst we have national health insurance, the reports on the pilot projects in all the provinces and the money that was spent on that, how much was that, and looking at value for money before we implement. Thank you very much. And then the last point is the figures that is in your presentation as a quarterly report. Can we assume that will be the figures that will come up in the annual reports late in the year? I just wanted to have an understanding on that. Thank you, Chairperson.
Sorry.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Good morning, colleagues. My name is Osina Komani from the Economic Freedom Fighters. I'm worried that we are having the underspending on weekend positions, whilst we have got so many people who are not working, and that is a very serious worrying factor. And my concern again is that there has been a consistent underspending in the job fund, and this committee has raised this concern for some time now. So one would ask a question of what is the status of that concern to date, and the other question would. The concern would be raised on the underspending, particularly on the cooperative governance and traditional affairs, on the fact that slide number 6, the fact that there are monies not being transferred to the implementing agents in the community works program as a result of delays in the submissions of necessary supporting documents. The concern here would be that it is brought to bear by the fact that we would find the implementing agents being changed after every 3 years, and some of those who does not have capacity, the implementing agents, and of which they would rely on the staff members who have been there for some time. I think it is time that the department or the treasurer make recommendations to say let those staff members who have been accountable to the implementing agents by virtue of those implementing agents being coming and going in after every 3 years. Maybe it's time that we also kept the issue of unemployment or sustainable jobs by maybe insourcing those staff members within the cooperative, the CWP, into the systems, because they have been doing that for some time. They know what needs to be submitted. But by this red tape of them submitting to the implementing agent, and the implementing agent, by virtue of them not knowing what to submit and what not to submit in time, we find that most of the service providers are not being paid. We are seated here with the service providers in the department, with the community works program, where they're the service providers who have procured last year. They haven't been paid to date, particularly in the Northwest. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Dikeledi Mahlangu is my name. I'm in the ACOP. Chair, let me start by joining all the speakers who have appreciated the presentation. I think this presentation is very important because it highlights, it empowers us as members of the committees in terms of the areas that we need to focus on. So to me, it's very empowering and just came at the right time when we started this first meeting. I really appreciate that. I also want to buy into the idea, Chair, that we do need the workshop. We agree to that. We had our sessions last week after elections of chairpersons that we'll have to have the workshops as part of the induction process. And among issues that need to be inducted on, I think is the technical language that is in here. I think there's been an issue about what do you mean when you talk about the environment and other issues. So the field might be too technical for some of us, but we need to do the work and we need to be empowered and rely on you so that when you come here, make presentations, we're in the same understanding with you, we're able to engage you and probe on the issues. From the NCOP side, we have agreed and we think it's important that we need to share with you our expectation as a committee. When we invite you to come and make a presentation, we will indicate what is it that we expect you to present on. The format is very important, Chair, that we need to agree on the format, because we don't want presentations to be done for the sake of compliance. It needs to be according to our expectations, so that when you come ready, so that we avoid deferring issues to the next meeting, and sometimes we lose them on the way. On slide number three, the issue of the understanding, I think it's not only on slide number three, on various slides. Overall, the issue of understanding. Honorable Member Tlanguni has said something about the overspending, that we have had concerns about overspending. Now there's this thing of underspending. And I'm directing this question to you as Treasury. Though these things are done by these other departments, and my expectation is that you as Treasury, you will give guidance in terms of financial management and performance. So the question that I have is that, are you focusing only on the spending, the figures, or are you looking at the figures in terms of the percentage, how much you have spent vis-a-vis the service delivered, the outcome? Because I've always had this question and a concern that, to me, it looks like the AG will say a certain municipality or a certain department has received a clean audit, and that will talk to the numbers, the figures. It will depend on how that whoever is responsible can play with figures and convince the AG that the spending is clean. But what about the impact, the outcome, in terms of the service delivery? So I'm saying this understanding that we are members of parliament responsible and oversighting on the public purse. So the outcome or the output is very important to us. The issue of the vacancy rate, with your permission, Chair. I know as per DPSA, 10% and below, not above 10% is allowed. And in your presentation, where you identified vacancy rate, it's only under Labour Department where you have indicated that the vacancy is the post, a funded post. So I don't know about other departments that vacancy rate, because there has always been a confusion, taking from the previous experience, that in the organogram you'll have posts that are there, but they are not budgeted for. And if you do an assessment, you will include those posts as vacant. So I don't know if the DPSA, together with you are able to make sure that departments exclude unfunded posts in their organogram so that they don't give a wrong picture about the rate of the vacancy. It's a point for concern to all of us, because as a country we know that the unemployment rate is very huge, and we have made commitments, all of us here as political parties, that will have to focus on employment, more especially on youth. And I'm saying this with the understanding that government is not an employment agency, but there's a role that we need to play. And if we have such a high rate of unemployment with this high rate of vacancies, then we have to have a problem with that. Honorable Chairperson, the presenter, Dr. Modise, you said you have had engagements with some departments in as far as these issues that you have identified. I think, Chair, I'd like to lobby you and the members of the committee that it will be appreciated if we can have those commitments that you have between you and the different departments as a program of action, so that we can be able to follow those things up if they do implement. My main issue is that I want us to prevent things to happen, so that we don't only come and blame and the damage is already done and wait for the AG at the end of the year. I know the AG is also open for engagements during the course of the year, that the remedial actions to try and improve the situation. Chair, I was nearly tempted to say bravo to health and education being the big departments and having spent that much, that 98 and 97, but I'm holding back to say that because of the question that I raised initially. Is this expenditure percentage speaks to the service delivery? That's why I'm holding back. The issue of violence, Doctor. I know that you are given the powers by PSMA. And there's a role that the portfolio committee or select committee has to play. When the department wants to make changes from their initial APP, maybe in your preparation for the induction, please empower us to know what legislation gives us those powers for us to be able to allow and not allow. I also wanted to understand, as treasurer, what reasons or where, how far are your powers for you to allow violence or not? Because if it's not a disaster, what is it? Wrong planning. Sometimes. The issue of water and sanitation, I've spoken a lot about it. I think it's 98.5%. But overall, even where I come from, overall in the country, there's been an outcry. Go to Diaz, there's an outcry in as far as water is concerned. And sanitation is a crisis, but they have spent 98.5. Does this speak to the service delivery, the output? Have we spent this money for what it was meant for? That's what we need to check on. Okay. This wasteful, fruitful expenditure, they are very scary, and they irritate the fruitless. They irritate me. And I feel like I can go to scope and let's go and do what I'm supposed to do. It's not acceptable. But you also understand, you try to justify some of the expenditures that, because of the IEC programs of special boards, registrations and whatever, they had to work overtime. Hence they did that. But other things are not really acceptable. It's very disappointing. And we have empowered us, we have highlighted those issues. When we meet with those departments, then we have issues. So we just need you to clarify us on other issues so that we are more empowered when we get there. Step FA, it has been portrayed as the best. So among this department, I didn't expect SFA to be among this problematic institutions. By then, it's all upon us. Thank you for highlighting that to us, that we should not take it for granted and obvious that the SFA is the institution. Not that we are happy. We want them to maintain that if at some stage they were the institution. We want them to go back to that. The invoicing thing, there has been a commitment, and I think the 30 days payment is a regulated matter. Is it not something that is in the PSMA? And there has been a commitment from Treasury, from the President and the former President during the SONA, Department of Monitoring, of Performance Monitoring and Evaluation, that will make sure that, you know, you monitor. At some stage, you'll correct me, there was a report that there's an improvement in as far as the 30 days payment is concerned. And we know the impact of this 30 days payment. The non-payment in 30 days has a negative impact on the small business, but not only on small business, generally in business. And if business, those entrepreneurs, they are not doing well, it will have an impact on the workers. Hence, we see Dinal paying workers two salaries, breaking their salaries into two, 85 and then whatever time, then another outstanding percentage. It's not acceptable. And I think it's doable. We just need you to strengthen your monitoring system. But disappointingly, among the department, treasury is there. I'm very disappointed because you must lead by example. I don't want to see you in this list. We don't expect you to lead in this thing. Because if things are not going well in treasury and you are supposed to monitor and help other departments to perform well, then there will be a problem. Please help us. Charity Ministry will start with treasury so that we can be able to deal with other ones. Chair, I'm finishing and thank you for your understanding. Chairperson, through you, if Treasury Doctor, you can listen to me and your chief. There has been this unfortunate situation in Civitas Building, in the Department of Health, that led to a strike. And I just want to find out from Treasury if you are aware of the extent of problems there, what caused this problem, and if those problems have been attended to, and if they have not been attended, what do we expect? Because if the workers are on strike, the issue of invoices will not be attended to because there are no people to attend to those invoices. The issue, also the overall reason why the strike, I think you know, and I also have an idea. I don't know, but I have an idea. So can you assist us and give us information if you know the extent of the problem that led to that strike and if it's been given the necessary attention? Chair, I know I've gone beyond what you expected me to go. I will just leave it at here at this point. Thanks,
the Honourable Chair. No, it's not you, all of us, because we're supposed to start with the presentation on the public entities at about, but I think we can deal with that. It's shorter, and I think the issues which were raised by the honourable members are very valid. I know you are going to be economic with your presentation, with your answers. Obviously, we're flagging a lot of things which need further engagement. I think that's what is happening. And secondly, when it comes to the public entities, because we would like to be finished by 1300 hours. But can I add to your problem of time so that this is the last round, this last round, and then we'll go in with the public entities and then we'll take many questions so that by 1 o'clock we're done. But again, let me join my colleagues in welcoming the enlightening presentation from you, Dr. Mutisa, and your team. I think it has been very helpful. Can you just educate me, because I want to look at the macro impact of what this underspending or overspending and so on, and even our fiscal position. When do we borrow? We are running a deficit in our budget. So I'll tell you what my worry is when we go and borrow and we find that we don't spend money and we incur cost of that money. So if you can enlighten us, if it's not now, in future, that how do we deal with that thing? Because we go to the market and borrow money to fund some of our things. and then you find that now we understand. I think that's one thing. Second, I think the colleagues have alluded to this thing, that I don't want us to be accountants here, where we look at overspending, underspending, the variance, and then explaining the variance. I think our approach should be more economic. I think Honorable Masang spoke about that. The impact of us, for instance, of underspending. We have said this as a country that we have got the challenge of inequality, of poverty, of unemployment, and you add there stunted economic growth, right? So for me, I think when we do all these things, I would like to see at the end of the day what the impact is, right? If you can do those modeling, because I think there's definitely an impact. I would have my hypothesis as to exactly what happens. But I think we need to understand that so that people just not say, no, we understand, and that's the end of the story. No. What is the impact of us underspending? So we need to get the impact. So rather than being accountants when we approach this, I would rather have us looking at what I'll call the impact approach. And again, spending for its own sake is also not desirable. How efficient is our spending? Perhaps coupled with that, for instance, I would like, I think they've alluded to it, if you could show us the profile of spending throughout the year, we'd like to see that, especially in a graph form, then you are able to see, because it will start telling you whether do we plan, or we start by saying we want this money, and then once we have got money, then we start planning, and then we end up not spending the money, you see. So it's very important for me that even before the start of the financial year, people have plans that that's what we'll do if we're to get money. But I get the impression, I think I know, not just like that, I know that we first get money, then we start planning. Before we know, because we must go through the process of procurement, of plans, and so on and so forth, before you know, 50% of the financial year is gone, and people start trying to implement things, and then again the possibility of fiscal dumping. So I think that's one of the things that I wanted to pick up with you. I think the delays in government employees' housing scheme is very problematic for me. Again, I think it talks to poor planning, and we're saying this thing knowing very, very well that it's not national treasure who must plan these things and so on. But I think in terms of the role that you play, to say we're going to give you money, what are the plans and so on and so forth. But again, really to have a government employees housing scheme as underspending, I don't think it's something that is we can defend. The procurement bill, I think, would like also to be finished with it exactly. What is it solving? Some of the things that you alluded to it, you don't need to answer now, but in our future engagement, whether it's a workshop and so on, what exactly are we trying to solve with it? Some of the problems that have been highlighted here, are we able to solve them? The question of 1.97 billion rand underspending in COGTA, it's a red light, a serious red light. We are coming from the elections, and as politicians, you know that we're busy knocking to different doors, and there's so many challenges there. So the question of underspending, I don't think it's something that can be defended. I think at some stage, honourable members, you asked whether we can call these departments. Yes, it's within our right. We'll call some of these departments, and I think one of the departments we should also assist will be a COGTA. And again, there seems to be a perennial problem at the Department of Defense. There seems to be a perennial problem about that over expenditure there. We may find ourselves next year coming back again and dealing with the same problem. Lastly, one of the things that when it comes to impact that we'll really be looking at all these expenditures is the question of employment creation. What is it doing? And even underspending, what is it doing too? Let alone the underspending, which is very obvious as far as us not filling certain vacancies. But the bigger impact on the economy, when it comes to underspending of some very important. There are billions here which are being underspent, money which would have been to the thrown into the economy and activate the economy. I just wanted to throw this one in. I would like to welcome Honorable Eunice Karim, both of us, myself and Honorable Masang, were his understudy. So I can see the way he's sitting there, he's busy ticking, and after this, I'll definitely, we'll definitely be meeting with you, Honorable Karim, and give us a feedback of some of the things that we need to do better. I think it's the question of remedial action. I think we need to touch on that. What do we do? Because we may come here and sit and so on and say and moan exactly what happens when these things they continue happening. What are the type of remedial measures that we are having? They just cover those things and then immediately after that we are going
to... Chairperson, can I raise a point of order, please? Firstly, for those of you who don't know, neither of them are my understudies. In fact, if anything, the chairperson from the NSI has got a master's in economics. I am a sociologist and a local government activist. So technically, he's far ahead of me. So firstly, that's inaccurate, and I ask him to withdraw that or write to me. And secondly, I'd like to raise a point of order in particular about my co-chair on the select committee side. She spoke for just as long as I would have done in a previous role. And she constantly, Natasha agrees, she constantly was irritated at me. So now she can never, ever, comrade chair, never, ever say, please, chairperson, you're talking for too long. Thank you very much.
Doctor?
Sorry, chair. I'm sure you want to interrupt.
Please.
Not work out.
Okay, please.
Thank you, chair. I will just on one item, which is more of a matter of emphasis, Dr. Modise. Firstly, we talk about the overspending on the part of the Department of Defense. I just want to check, is that inclusive of the Department of Military Veterans? It's very important for us to understand that. Yeah. All right. Then secondly, COCTA, similarly, is in a similar situation in the sense that these are two different departments. There's Department of Cooperative Governance and there's Department of Traditional Affairs. So there is underspending in the Department of COCTA. Is that underspending inclusive of the Department of Traditional Affairs? That's my first question. The reason why I'm advancing that question is that during the fifth administration, we were told that the Department of Traditional Affairs doesn't have budget for goods and services. The entire amount of money allocated to that department, it goes to the wage bill or the salary bill. Now, if there is an underspending on the overall department, which is headed by one political head, it's problematic for us in the sense that there are quite a number of challenges which manifest in traditional areas of the country. Traditional areas which are headed by traditional leaders. And we speak about 863 traditional councils which are inefficient simply because there are no resources for goods and services for them to execute their work. And secondly, the gross lack of tools of trade for the traditional councils. So what I would want to advance, I wouldn't miss this opportunity to say that part of the remedial action for me shouldn't just be the old way of remedial action, is to say that how do you best segregate these resources so that there are clear resources which are budgeted for cooperative governance and other resources are located specifically for traditional affairs so that you are able to tackle a whole range of challenges that we face. For instance, in this season, we have a situation of many children who pass on as a result of the lack of resources on the part of the traditional councils of the country to be able to tackle the issue of bogus initiation schools, just as an example. Because the bogus initiation schools it's part of a human trafficking of a special type in the sense that it uses tradition. And traditional leaders are caught wanting because they don't have tools of trade to deal with that. And they are expected to lead from the front insofar as that is concerned. So it would be helpful that as part of your remedial action, you ensure that you specifically look at budgeting for that department so that it is not caught wanting as it manifests at a traditional council level. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair.
Okay.
Chair, sorry, just on a point of order, Chair. I think for meeting structure, if the chair is closed, can we not take another member for question because we might be tempted to also raise some points. So when the chairs have closed and summarized, I think that give precedence for response to the department. I think we must just follow that, Chair. Thank you.
Thanks. Noted. The honourable member just reminded us that his hand was up and we forgot him. Honourable Doc.
Chair, just to say that the Department of Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation is responsible for monitoring target service delivery and impact. It is not part of the mandate of public finance. So if the committee has its deliberation on the workshop, you may want to include also DPME, because we in the previous administration also asked that they come along because they are the custodians of the non-financial information. We are the custodians of the financial information. So even though it appears when we're talking, Chair, that we're just only talking money, there is a department responsible for looking at the targets and linking. The previous honourable member also asked if there was underspending, did they meet their targets. Those are the kinds of questions DPME would be in a better position than the Treasury to. Obviously, we do pay attention to that, but it's not our mandate. So when the committee deliberates about the workshop, you may want to include that department in a short presentation as to how they do that and what information they can provide to the committee as well.
Chair, just to be very brief, because I think that the idea of the workshop is an excellent one, and I think it would be good to go through, you know, a number of the legal framework and some of the other issues in more detail. So I don't really want to engage in detail now, but just on to one or two questions that were raised on health. Firstly, the question about the poor performance on the NHI pilot. So the pilots are finished. There is a report by the Department of Health. We are not very happy with the report. I think I've commented earlier here about that we are not happy with the performance of the NHI grant, and we're bringing that to your attention. We'll continue to report back on the progress on that. So we will continue to engage with you and the department on that. We do, of course, these RYMs, which is the in-year monitoring, so we do, of course, engage the department at least monthly on their spending and the spending linked to their performance. So we are engaging regularly with the departments on all these issues. The question that the co-chair asked about the state of Civitas building, Chair, because of its sensitivity, I don't want to respond here. I think it's better the department respond to that because it pertains to the details of their building plans and their work also with. Of course, they don't fix the building themselves. It's their relationship with the property trading account that also looks after that building. But I think the point I was trying to make, Chair, which we're very unhappy with, is the way the department managed the situation and has been managing the situation, because the situation has grumbled on for paralyzing the department for a year. So the department has not been functioning adequately. And that we're bringing to the attention to the department, because we would hate to see this kind of non-functioning of the department continue for another year.
Chairperson, just to close up some of the questions, so most of the co-opter understanding will be dealt with in the report that we will send, and honourable members, please have a look at the report, and if you want more information, then we can definitely provide. As Julia said, the spending vis-a-vis the service delivery,
the Department of Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation should come with us, and then they can explain it, because they look at the targets and they look at what the department has managed to spend. And then the question on Treasury, I see Honourable Member has left, and he asked us on the SABC turnaround plan. I think that question we will take after lunch, because that looks at the appropriation bill, and the SABC is one of the institutions there. The National Treasury, as the accounting department, last in the previous administration, they were required to come and update their committee on the IFMS, Integrated Financial Management System. So I'm not sure whether they will continue to do that, but I think the committee can definitely ask the Treasury to come and explain the progress on the IFMS, the progress also on the Jobs Fund, and the Office of the Chief Procurement Officer on the bill, and also Treasury can explain the 30-day payment if they have the report. Chairpersons and honourable members, I think what we struggle with is that the PFMA says if the accounting officer of a department does not pay within 30 days, it constitutes financial misconduct. But there has never been any DG who was arrested for not paying. So while there's the Act, who implements, who enforces the Act? I mean, Treasury can write a letter to the DG or to the Minister to say this is financial misconduct, please take action. But that's as far as we go. What we can do is to bring it here, and then with the help of the committee, we can come up with remedial actions. Because all this needs is you make an example with two departments, that if the invoices are accurate and there's no dispute, this is what you do, and hopefully that will help. Because you're right, Chairperson, we made a lot of announcements on we're going to do the best we can for the 30 days we must pay, but if the accounting officer doesn't, then what? What is it that we must do to make sure that we enforce this, and that has not been there? We will provide all the information that has been required. I also just asked the honourable members to look at the report that we sent with the presentation, see if this information is useful for you. Then when we do the report, then we can discuss the information in the report and whether this information is useful to you or not. Chairperson, can I move on to the public entities? That presentation, as short as it is, it's more technical than the previous one.
Dr. you do flag issues. As we have said, that we'll be following up on some of these things, because some of these entities, we may have to call them for a more detailed engagement. But it's important for us so that we are aware that there are these issues, and which you can't, with the limited time that you are having, and again, not being responsible for a particular institution, you can't answer on their behalf. But it's very important from where you are that you flag those issues for the benefit of the members.
Thank you so much, Chairperson. So just moving on to the second presentation, the data issues that we have with the reporting of public entities and the mechanism, I think we can look at that when we do the workshop, so that you have a good idea of what is happening. But I think what I want to explain is that there are different types of institutions that this committee is responsible for. So we have Schedule 1 entities, which are constitutional institutions. That includes your public protector. Then you have Schedule 2 entities, which are your major public entities, like your ESCOM, SAA, SABC. Those are the entities that, because there are no appropriated funds, well, not till recently, because there are no appropriated funds, those institutions do not report to the committee. However, if we have appropriated money to these entities, they can certainly come and report to the committee and explain how they're using appropriated funds. So just because an entity is a Schedule 2 and you don't, it doesn't necessarily report to the committee, once we allocate money to them, that becomes the business of this committee. So the simple ones where it's very clear-cut that they report to the committee would be your national government public entities, like your museums, like your parks. So those institutions are the ones that you report to. There's about 300 of these entities all in all, just over 300. So the previous committee has given us a list of these entities that you should look at. So when we have the workshop, we'll present all the institutions, and then you can have a look and see which ones you think the committee should focus on, so that when we come and present, we present with the ones that the committee is looking for. So the choices of these entities was, one, are they big entities? Do they receive big transfers? That was what we looked at. The second was, do they have problems? These entities, those were identified. Do they have surpluses? What's going on with the entities? So today, because we are used to reporting like this, we're only reporting on the entities that were selected by the previous committee, but nothing stops us from adding new ones or subtracting ones that the committee feels there's no need to have that. This slide is just looking at how reporting, but I think when we have the workshop, I will explain it properly. So basically, just looking at the data we're presenting to you today, we're looking at the cash flow statement. So unlike the departments, what is important with these institutions is that, do they have money in their own systems to fund themselves? How are they funding themselves, and how are they investing this amount of money? So if you look at, for example, the compensation fund, what we're basically showing, honorable members and chairperson, we're showing the receipts, so where do they get the money, we're showing how do they spend this money, we're showing the investment, and at the end of the quarter, how much do they have left in terms of cash, can they sustain themselves for the rest of the year. So basically for this fund, we don't really have a lot of problems with the fund, because they receive money mainly from increased compliance by employers, so they don't get all their money from the fiscals. They spend most of it in terms of claims, which is what they were established for, and they've been managing their business quite well, and the cash that is available at the end of the quarter amounted to $1.7 billion, so we don't think that this entity will have issues in terms of self-sustainability. Then just quickly looking at legal aid, they get most of their money from the transfers, but also they get interest from some of their bank reserves, and for the quarter that interest was about $16.4 million. They spend most of the money in compensation of goods and services, but this is okay because what they do is they provide a service to all South Africans, so you would expect that they spend the money. They do have some spending on buildings and other structures, but if you look at their major spending, that will be on compensation. And because they get most of their transfers, they don't have a lot of issues. If you quickly look at the National Empowerment Fund, they get their revenues mainly from the interest on the loans that they charge. But what we have picked up with the entity is that the recovery rate of these loans is decreasing, and as a result they might be having a bit of a problem in terms of the cash that is available for the year. So the loan disbursement, that means the interest that they could have gotten, is becoming smaller. But so far we have asked the entity to try and manage the rate in which they disperse, the amount at which they disperse vis-a-vis the interest they get and the payments that they receive back. So what they need to do is just to make sure they don't give too many loans vis-a-vis what they get back. So that is the Empowerment Fund. The National Health Laboratory Services, the reason why we have put it on the list is that they get their payments, so they provide a service to provinces or to other government institutions. So there's some tendency for other provinces not to pay the entity on time, and if they don't do that, it means the entity will be in financial distress. They had large invoice disputes with two provinces, but that seems to have been sorted out. But what we need to do is just to quarterly monitor if they're receiving the payments and just to make sure they don't run into financial difficulties. Then the National Research Foundation, not a lot of problems here. They manage their activities well, and they also still have cash in their books, so we're not too worried about that. And they're spending lesser on compensation of employees, which is not a big deal for a National Research Foundation because it's not a service delivery institution, but they're more on research. So underspending there was not a problem for us. The National Skills Fund, mainly they receive their income from the Skills Development Levy, which is a tax that is charged on employees, so they don't get much of their income from the state. They've been spending well, and the cash at the end of the quarter was close to 200 million, and they only forecasted about 114 million. So this is good. It's 80.8% higher, I mean 80.8 million. Higher than what they projected, and this is mainly due to lesser disbursements. Then you look at the National Student Aid Financial Scheme. Chairperson and honorable members, the biggest problem that this entity was facing was trying to deal with the fee-free higher education that was announced. So basically, they now had a large number of students that they had to cater for, and the entity wasn't equipped enough to do this. There's been a lot of work by both the Department of Higher Education on trying to cost the full implication of fee-free higher education, and we're still waiting on the information, but at least there's some progress there. The entity receives most of their money from the state, and the underspending, which is presented in the last bullet of 5 billion, basically is the delays in the disbursements. But as I said, it's because now they had to expand their databases and try to capture every student in there. Once they fix those systems, the disbursements would become much easier. Then we have the Passenger Rail Agency of South Africa. The biggest problem that we have with PRASA is that they have a lot of cash available at the end of the year, so they had 11.5 billion. But this is a problem because it means the way, the rate at which they're fixing the trains or the rate in which they're maintaining is much slower. So they just have the money. You may think it's good for an entity to have money, but not for this one. For this one, you want them to spend the money and fix the trains and fix the metro rail. So hopefully with the new board, with the executive, they can start having proper plans to deal with this. The budget or the appropriation bill will show that Treasury moved some of the money from PASA because of the large cash that is available. But that is not a good thing because you want a system that works. So just because they have the money and we can move some of the money, it means we're creating a long-term issue, because once they start becoming efficient, then they have to start moving the money. If they don't have the money, then you still have infrastructure problems. So we have been dealing with the Department of Transport to try and resolve this matter. And if you had to ask me, Chairperson and honorable members, the Department of Transport should be one of those departments that we have a discussion with so that they can let the committee know how they plan to equip PRASA to do what it's supposed to do. The Road Accident Fund, this is one of the biggest headaches that we have. The way in which the Road Accident Fund was designed, it's a fault system, so it means that the liability that the Road Accident Fund has is almost 200 billion now. We will still have to deal with it. Now the RAPS, Road Accident Benefit Scheme, the bill is in Parliament, but the longer the delays, the higher the liability that we have to pay. So we would like this bill to be fast-tracked and finalized as fast as possible. But you know, if the lawyers have been making a lot of money with the previous scheme, they will try to delay it as much as possible. But if Parliament can pass this bill and we can implement the new system, then we can at least try and reduce the already existing liability. The problem with this liability is that if a person wins the claim and the road accident fund says, yes, you should get the claim, but you will get it when we get the money, it's not even a contingent, it's what the state has to pay. So we are 100 billion short in terms of paying the accident victims. So that money has to come from somewhere. We still have to find that money. And where to find it is going to be another problem. So the Road Accident Fund, I think this is one of those entities that we also have to look at. But unfortunately for them, this is not their own fault. This is the way in which they were established that is causing such delays. So 2 years ago, we increased the fuel levy to try and deal with the Road Accident Fund liabilities. This year the increase was about 5 cents. So basically the amount of money in the fuel levy that is going to the Road Accident Fund is not even enough to cover the liabilities for that particular year. So for the year, if they say 30 billion is what has been approved, the fuel levy itself gets them to 25, 26. So each year you have a couple of billion, that is a gap that will need to be financed. South African National Parks, nothing there. They're okay. They had about 1.6 billion in terms of cash that is available at the end of the year. I think we have spoken a lot. So South African Revenue Services, there's been a new commissioner and they have come to ask for money from Treasury last year to improve and enhance their services because they lost a lot of people. We did propose that we allocate 1.5 billion over the 3 years to try and capacitate the institution. So far we're happy with SARS and we hope that they can start fast-tracking this capacitation. Then SANRAL. I must not say what I think. I must talk about the treasury mandate because the DG will give me a piece of his mind. But in terms of Sandra, especially Ito, but you know, Sandra is we had to bail it out for 2-3 years now in a row. Unfortunately, the GFIP is giving SANRAL a headache. So before, what they used to do was to take the money from the other toll booths and fund the GFIP while the state was still deciding on what to do with GFIP. But now the GFIP debt has gotten to a point where the other tolls are now affected, so they can't really fully pay for the GFIP. So we had to via money from the non-toll to the toll. So SANRAL is an institution that is broken down into two. You have the toll component of SANRAL, where they get the revenues from toll. Then the non-toll, where, and this is targeting the roads where, especially from rural provinces and the rural part of the country, where the state pays for these roads. So what we had to do, because the toll one was not sustainable, we moved money from non-toll, so they built less roads in the non-toll to try and service the debt of the e-toll, which is a problem. Now, we moved too much money out of the non-toll, so now the non-toll portfolio is being affected. So we had to find ways in which we started moving money from the Department of Transport portfolio itself. So we moved money from Prasa. I did say that Prasa has cash reserves, but we had to move money from Prasa and give it to SANRAL because SANRAL was in a financial difficulty. The issue with that is that you're basically moving funds from the poor who uses Metro Rail and you're giving it to the people who uses the M1 or where the GFIP is. So in terms of budgeting, is that a good budgeting? Is not a good budgeting? That's the decision that the committee has to make. So in the appropriation bill that we will be presenting, Chairperson, after lunch, there is an allocation to SANRAL, and that allocation is about or just over 2 billion, and that money is being moved from other components of the transport. So the question to the committee would be, is that a fair budgeting principle? Is that what we should be doing with movement of such funds, and what is it that we must do with SANRAL as an entity, especially focusing on the GFIP? Are we going to continuously finance it from other sources of income, or are we going to let the ETOL process work? I hope that was politically correct explanation on SANRAL. And then I'm actually trying to look at the DGIC, is not here, so I'm sort of safe for now. I hope not. On the South African Social Security Agency, the biggest issue that was there, but this was sorted, was the migration from CPS. Cash, yes. So it was just the migration to SAPO. We did support SASA, and the migration took place, and I think they are now sustainable. And there's still a little bit of hiccups there and there, but this is a well-managed system, and they have sufficient money in the system, and we haven't had much problems with SASA. And the SA Tourism, we're still okay. The visa regulations sorted them out in terms of financing. They still do their business quite well because they pay in advance for all their international obligations, so they tend to save money there. The Unemployment Insurance Fund, this is one of the few social security funds where they have large surpluses, and these are due to the payments of beneficiaries vis-a-vis the contributions, but this fund is well sustainable, and they have enough money, or they still have cash. The cash at the end of the quarter was 2.7 billion. So basically they're receiving much larger contribution from the employers and the employees vis-a-vis what they're paying in terms of benefits. But we don't really have a lot of issues in terms of the unemployment insurance fund. Chairperson, that's me and my entities.
Thank you so much, Doc. Honourable members, can we take questions? And let's be concise. Time is against us. We only have got about 25 minutes to ask and to answer. Okay, as I said, it's more about flagging the issues. We can always follow up on other times. Thank you. One, who else? Once a bite. Two. Three, four.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Willie Okomp. I'm from the Democratic Alliance. Doctor, you've just touched on the fact that monies have been transferred from PRASA to SANRAL, etc., etc., and that there is an effect on the poor. Obviously, the poor uses the trains. People that's got money to buy cars, they use the road, so they are benefited by doing that. This will happen in a lot of instances where overspending takes place. Let's say, for instance, at the National Student Financial Aid Scheme, there's an overspending of 4.8 billion rands. Where does that money come from? That money does not come from the trees and we go and pluck it. That money were used for a certain purpose, but it has been taken from another department or another area where less money will be spent. My first question is, where did that 4.8 billion rand come from? Which departments have been taken money away from them? And what would the effect be on those departments? We tend to look only at the benefit of something We give money for something, in this case for student fees, but we do not look at the bigger picture of where we are losing out. And that is the problem that we've got to look into the long run. It might be a very popular thing to do when people are demanding certain stuff and to just give in to that, but not looking at the bigger problems it creates in the bigger scheme of things. So if you can please just elaborate on that for me, I would appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Chair. My name is Oscar Matafa. I'm from the African National Congress. My chair is just on the slow spending under the Research Foundation. The chair earlier alluded to the challenges that the country is grappling with of inequality, unemployment, a stagnant economy, and high rising debt ratios. So my question is based on the fact that we see a slow spending on from the Research Foundation. And you are saying that we welcome the slow spending. My concern is, how does the slow spending impact on the overall effectiveness of the foundation? And I'm posing this question simply because I think we've reached a stage as a country where we have to identify what we can term economic drivers, sectors or aspects of the country that will be able to eradicate the challenges that we've been speaking with. As an example, I'll use Rwanda. Rwanda has used their research arm to identify themselves as a possible knowledge economy. And as we are speaking, they are booming in that regard. So as South Africa, have we reached a point where we are able to identify our economic drivers? Are we a manufacturing economy? Are we a knowledge-based economy? And I think pretty much the Research Foundation, if it's able to identify those particular programs and increase on their spending, it will be able to assist in that regard. Chair, my last one is on the issue of, and it's coming across from various entities, the challenges that the supply chain is facing. And it also came out in the previous presentation. We just want to find out from the view of the National Treasury, what seems to be the problem? Because it seems as if the supply chain challenges are inherent across the board. So we just want to find out if whether is there a systematic approach in a way that such challenges can be eliminated. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. Maybe I must start with the big elephant in the room. The elephant in the room being what the doctor said about possibly being watched by her DG and whether she is politically correct. I think as somebody who is truly responsible for making sure that you track each and every rand and cent of South Africa, I don't think that there would be any statement that makes you politically incorrect at any given stage. Yes, and I think it is important that as Treasury we can have confidence that you ask the right questions, because it is from the political considerations that programs are generated and that you need to be able to make sure that the money is spent. I think it is also, Chairperson, now speaking to members of this committee, a truly a painful experience to sit here and listen to the fact that we seem to be saying that this government is a pro-poor government, but we then take from the poorest of the poor. For example, if you have to take money from PRASA for the reasons you have advanced and give it to SANRAL to sustain the roads for which those who might have been differently endowed, should have been paying for, I think that is a very serious challenge. I know, and I'm happy that the Premier of Gauteng did make a pronouncement again about the GFIP or the ETOL issue, and it is going to be like that up until maybe at another stage when we meet with National Treasury, this matter will be raised with them, because the GFIP is actually not a roads issue, it is a finance issue, it's a funding model issue. And up until National Treasury and Department of Transport and probably the Presidency resolves on a funding model for Sanral, this matter would always be the big elephant in the room. But I think it, as a Member of Parliament, it cannot be fair for me to agree to take truly from those trains. We know here the Western Cape trains have been burned primarily because they arrive late and all those type of things. They don't have windows, they don't have seats, and all those type of challenges that they have. And then we take that money, instead of forcing Sanral to make sure that the trains are in good condition, we take the money and give it to the roads. So it means the GFIP gets multiple sources of funding in terms of taking from PRASA, which in essence PRASA is contesting for space with Gautrain. So if you take what government is subsidizing the Gautrain, this is the metro rail, this is grossly unfair to the poorest of the poor. Those workers who get dismissed from work for arriving late because the trains were late, and sometimes they never even arrive at work. So I think it is important that we truly look at the considerations that we're making here. We still have the PRMG, which is the Provincial Roads Maintenance Grant, which is also given to provinces, the biggest portion going to Gauteng, to make it possible that they can build alternative roads for those not using the tolled roads. But also the biggest painful thing, we've got children crossing rivers in KZN in the Eastern Cape, and children not going to school in the Northern Cape, primarily because there's no roads. And we take from the non-toll to give to the tolling aspect. Can we sleep at night if we take those type of decisions as members of parliament? Because in essence we are saying, if you are poor, remain in that type of situation. Because we are not going to give you money, we are not going to be able to do any, we are going to sustain the payment of the I'll make an example in conclusion. There was a good example, Chairperson of SCOA. You'll meet with that one time when you are in your political deployment, where in a community in somewhere in the Northern Cape where they were saying, we're just asking for one road that we can cut on the middle to create two roads, one going north, one going south. And now you're telling us that where there are 10 roads, 5 going that way, 5 coming this way, we must continue allowing for that. And those who don't have a road, say to them, remain in that situation, you will never have a road. Those who don't have a road, those who don't have a bridge, you will remain in that type of situation. For me, that is something that really I cannot appreciate, and I cannot fully accept being here to decide to say I agree that we take the money from PRASA to give to Sanral. Yes, Sanral needs to be helped to sustain the beautiful infrastructure network they have. But we need to look for an alternative way of dealing with that. But maybe it's not for your unit. It is for another time. The chairperson will understand from which corner I come from. Thank you very much.
What's the next? Okay, please help me to help you. Let's finish it now. Honourable Chairman.
Thank you, Chairperson. A short question. I just would like to ask if the Treasury is aware of any investigation into the existence of all these entities. Now, does Parliament have to do it from time to time? Or because some of these entities were part of the Department some years ago, and it just grew over into entities, with boards, and expenses, and so on. So one has to start doing some research. Is it better the entity or on its own, or is it doing, could it be come back another department, a part of a department that can do the work? I just want to know if such investigation is in place or underway or not sure. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. And once more, thank you for empowerment. All these entities, they are very important, and they have we have issues with them. In one way or sometimes we'll have to find time to call them to account. And you have just clarified that we have that power as a committee to call them here. I will not mention them one by one because I have different experiences with different entities. The National Employment Empowerment Fund, the National Health Laboratory Services, there are issues around all of them. But I want to start by agreeing with the Honorable Dipuo Peters. I'm sharing the same sentiment. In your presentation, you said, with what you have highlighted and the frustrations that you are coming across, we might be as a committee, and you were preparing us for the next session when we deal with the appropriation bill. Can advise you, and I'm happy that Dr. Janji is here also from PBO. I'm sharing the same sentiment, but as a professional, you'll also assist. And it's not a matter of politics, it's just not correct to take from the poor and punishing the poor for what they are not responsible for. One thing that I must ask, the underspending of BRASA. How come have you or were they able to explain themselves to you in as far as their under expenditure? Why are they underspending? Why do we have these real challenges? The infrastructure that is aging, that is decaying and all those things. Why are they underspending? What is the challenge? Are they unable to get the necessary skill to can deal with those challenges? Are they not aware? Are they not willing? I'm not sure. It's very frustrating because now it makes you to say, because they are not spending, then we are taking this money to Sandran. And that money is highly needed. And we need to prioritize, stick by our commitment, you know. The issue of bailing out, I've always had a problem with the bailing out. While I understand that it's necessary, you only do it when you find it necessary. But it can't just be a blank check. I think you need to be stringent in terms of your conditions. It must be conditional, so that those entities, they don't just get bailed out from you and spend, and there are no conditions, and they know at the end of the day, because they are important in the country or in your operation as government, you are going to bail them out, continuously bailing them out. That cannot be accepted. Somehow we need to have strict conditions so that they can be able at some stage to be independent, stand alone and operate on their own, not relying on government all the time, that you pour in money there all the time. The last one, Chair, on the issue of road accident fund, this one, I think we need to talk I hope the DG and the minister were here when we talk about this, because they need to talk to their colleagues, the minister in transport. And I think we should also do our part as chairperson, to talk to the chairperson in transport, to fast track this thing. Because this might not might be seen as a not so important thing, but it's very, very, very important, and it impacts directly on the workers and the poor. Because you spoke about levy. There are other sectors that are taking advantage of this new
new law that is going to replace the ref, because they are benefiting and they are abusing it. But at the end of the day, the person who is suffering is the ordinary South African. When the fuel levy is going up, public transport goes up. People are paying more to go to work while their wages are not up. Ordinary workers, they are suffering. So you see how frustrating it is. And hence I'm saying, I hope the minister, wherever he is, the deputy minister and the DG, they are watching and they can see. And we must continue pushing this thing. It can't be acceptable. And the bill must be fast-tracked. Thank you, Chair.
Please respond to the too big to fail. Moral hazard problem.
In the 5 minutes, the questions, I must say, the comments are welcomed. Just starting with the last one, we would really appreciate the help, because once this bill becomes an act, then we can start dealing with the debt, but we know at least it's sorted out for the future. Then we don't have to accumulate so much cost. Chairperson, the conditions attached to this bailout, the question is, what happens to the entity if they do not meet the conditions? Do we have in place enforcement? So if Treasury says this is what you have to achieve, what happens if they don't achieve? Do we bring them to Parliament? What do we do with these entities? Because what we can do as the Treasury, of course, is to say, these are your conditions, this is what you need to use the money for. But if the entity decides otherwise, we don't have in place a mechanism, because they have different rules that they adhere to. They have the Companies Act and all of those rules. But I think in the afternoon we can talk about that. The underspending in PRASA, Chairperson, is mainly because of capacity issues in PRASA. But I will ask my colleague just to add on it when I finish with the other one, just for 2 minutes. The NMOC process, which is the National Macro Reorganization of Government. Me too, the acronyms are difficult for me. They are the people that are responsible for the reorganization of the state. I'm not 100% sure that public entities are part of it, but I can go and check. I will speak to the presidency, because they are running that process, and I can respond with the rest of the reports, because I'm really not sure in that process. The public entities, the reason for the supply chain problems, Honourable Member, is because they also comply with the PFMA, and all the PFMA regulations apply to the Schedule 3As. They apply to them, so the procurement bill will also form part of dealing with the entities. The reason I said I welcome the understanding in compensation for the National Research Foundation is that was a saving that was identified, and they moved that money for capital projects, focusing on research and development rather than spending it on salaries. So the reason I say I welcome it is because of what they're using the money for. And I'll just ask Julia to speak about NSF. Thank you.
Honourable Member asked about NSFAS. That is just a classification issue. It was classified when it was loans under one item. It's now a bursary, so it's classified under a different item. So the money is still within the entity, within the entity's books. It's within the entity, it doesn't come from anywhere else. And the reason that it looked like that is because by the time of the announcement in December, they'd already locked the budget, because that is how we write the documents. So it's just a classification error, and that's what we explained in the second bullet. The issue that you're raising about fee-free higher education, that is not we really just report on expenditure. So when we get to the appropriation bill this afternoon, we can ask that question again.
you very much, Deputy Chairperson. On the understanding on CASA, you know, again, as you stated, you know, it's largely a structural issue that we have, and DDG has mentioned that part of it is the capacity to implement, but a significant part of it was the corporate governance issues that we've seen over the last few years, the instability of the organization. Now, just one step back, because of the structural issues and the incapacity to spend, you have these idle funds, and that creates opportunity cost, and that's what led to the doors opening for the funds to be moved to SANRAL. So it's a difficult situation to be in, because you have this money that is sitting there for the poor that's intended for maintenance and capital investment and upgrading, but it's not being spent. And you don't want to continually put money there, and it's just going to be an increasing balance sheet. So the opportunity cost is, can we use some of that money for something like SANRAL in the interim? And that's a huge discussion, as you guys have elaborated. But what's interesting is that although PRASA doesn't have capacity to spend or implement, their operational budget is far too high. The operational expenditure, should I say. They've got a very bloated organization, too many personnel, and the operational expense is too high, and their revenues, their own revenues that they're getting, is too low. And that's also linked to the capital issue, because you have fare evasion, because the security isn't in place for to control people who aren't paying, and that's because the maintenance hasn't been done, and that's because the structures haven't been upgraded. So it's a really a vicious cycle. So yeah, the understanding of PRASA is an institutional problem, and I think that the DOT as the oversight department really needs to come to the party and really needs to come and explain, because there has been turnaround strategies, several I think, but what has become of them? Thank you.
Honourable members, DDG, Dr. Taylor, and your team, thank you very much. Let's adjourn until 1400 hours, same venue, and we'll give you the second part of our program. Thank you very much.
Thank you.